Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In recent years, on my website, in the last 3 or so years, I have been pointing out the possible big opportunities with gold. And recently, there has been so much happening as a direct result of these stupid COVID lockdowns globally. And I've said from the beginning that these lockdowns are going to destroy the economy. And of course, one needs to ask oneself, which is more important, the COVID or the lockdown? And I find it very weird that these lockdowns have been foisted on everybody everywhere. I don't think that it matches the scale of the apparent threat of COVID. And that the real issue is the damage to the economies from the lockdowns. Now, Alex Linder and I have also been talking about whether there are investments and things that could help whites, whether whites can somehow make a bit of money. Since everything is rigged to such a degree against whites, and whites especially in the right are being banned, etc. So one of the things that Alex Linder has been talking about for quite some time on our show and also privately when we chat has been the issue of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And Alex Linder has bemoaned the fact that he wished he'd got into Bitcoin 10 years ago because one would have made an enormous amount of money back then. But of course, none of these things are obvious at first, and it is quite understandable that he didn't do it. I didn't even think about Bitcoin until recent years. And what Alex Linder has been talking about has been that there are lots of cryptocurrencies and more cryptocurrencies coming out. And he was saying that he's looking for a cryptocurrency that can go up tenfold. And if he can find one that he thinks is going to go up tenfold, then he'd like to tell whites about it so that whites can dive in and make some money. And I like that idea too. However, it could be that we don't even have to wait for a new cryptocurrency, that we can already leverage on Bitcoin in a big way. Now, Bitcoin is something that I've been wary of myself, very wary of, because it is so volatile. I've never seen Bitcoin as a store of money. But in this video, we're going to discuss Bitcoin, gold, and silver. Gold is my favorite. Silver is horrible. Silver is something that should have made money for people on many occasions, and I've yet to meet somebody who actually succeeded with silver. Silver and gold are supposed to work sort of in unison, but they are nasty. And all I know is that everybody that I know, including myself, who's ever touched silver, has walked away with losses. But things could be different this time. And that's what I'm going to discuss in this video. Now, one of Alex Linder's guys that he really follows closely is a guy called Max Keiser. And Max Keiser is very bullish on Bitcoin. And Max Keiser also supports gold and silver. And Max Keiser recently made a stunning prediction. But it's not just the predictions that are stunning. What's more important is that in the past, he's made a prediction about Bitcoin, and he was the closest and most accurate of the predictors. And that is the key reason why we're going to look at him today. Alex Linder follows Max Keiser very closely and thinks very highly of him. And for me, it was very interesting to see this prediction and also the previous prediction. So Max Keiser might be onto something. And what you're going to hear from Max Keiser is going to shock you. But what I also want to do is I also want to give a little bit of advice to people. I'm not an investment analyst, I'm not a specialist, so I'm not a professional that you can officially trust. I'm just going to explain to you what I've done and what I've learned And the only thing that I've seen in my life that ever seems to actually deliver some kind of result. And that's what I want to discuss with you. Because these things are so tricky that even when the going is good, you can actually lose money. These things are so exceptionally tricky. And so I want to mention a few things that I've learned and what I personally think is the only system that works for me. And if you like it, you are welcome to use the idea yourself. How I got into gold was in the 1980s here in South Africa. At a point, I was looking for something to invest in. I was reading prepping stuff back then already. I've been reading prepping and World War III stuff since the 1980s. In fact, since the late 1970s when I was a teenager in Rhodesia. And so the notion that there's going to be World War III and that big trouble is coming, etc. This is actually an old thing, and I've gone through a number of iterations of this. But in the late 1980s in South Africa, when things were getting wild here, I was following a guy in America called Don McIlvaney. And Don McIlvaney was a big-time gold bug. McIlvaney even came to South Africa. McIlvaney hated communism. McIlvaney actually believed the whites of South Africa were going to have an all-out war against the communists. And he even met the president of South Africa, P.W. Botha, and he was totally sold on the idea as a Christian that these Christian Boers and whites of South Africa would go and fight an all-out war against the Russians here in South Africa itself, on South African soil. And that is all part and parcel of the so-called liberation wars. And McIlvaney was big into gold and silver. And so I was looking for something that I could invest in here in South Africa in gold. And then there was a company that set up a thing called a mutual fund. There were some big corporates that set up things known as mutual funds. You guys in America have a similar thing. But it's not called a mutual fund, it's something else. I'm not sure if it's a something K or whatever, but it's a similar concept. So anyway, a mutual fund basically works on, they would have things called units, and you would buy into this mutual fund, and you would, let's say, buy a certain amount per month. You'd set up a debit order on your account, and every month, a fixed amount is pulled out of your bank account and put into this fund. And I ran with this thing for 7 years, and my little bit of money that I put into this thing actually grew and grew, and 7 years later I actually closed it and I withdrew the money because I had a business idea with my brother, and so I pulled the money out to use it for that. But that was the first time ever as an adult that I had been able to actually invest in something over a period of time, and it delivered a really good result. I think it ran from about 1987 to about 1994, something like that. That was the period of time it ran. And gold wasn't even doing well at the time. Gold was not doing well back then. But I was very taken by this little effort and the bit of money I put in and how much I got out at the end of it. And that was my first taste of gold. And thereafter, I never forgot this. Then, round about the year 2000, it was also a very bad period of time for me. I'd never struggled so much to find work as in the period 1998 to 2000. I really struggled a lot. But at that time with the internet, etc., I was looking at the gold price again, and I was looking at it, and I wasn't reading any newsletters, but when I was looking at it, it looked to me like the gold price had fallen a lot, and it looked to me like it was real cheap, and I thought to myself, surely this thing is going to go up. Now, something that was happening in the Western world for a long time, in the 1980s and 1990s, there was a massive push across the Western world to dump gold. And the Russians and the Chinese were buying gold, while all across the Western world, they were dumping gold. Every single government was dumping gold. Now, I have wondered whether this in somehow relates to a war against South Africa, because when I got to South Africa in 1980, the gold price was shooting through the roof, and South Africa was the world's biggest gold producer in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And so I had wondered whether there was some kind of Jewish move to either destroy South Africa or just generally destroy the Western world and thereby convince all the governments to not buy gold. And in the 80s and 90s, they were dumping gold, tons and tons and tons of gold. They were dumping vast amounts of gold all across the Western world, America, Canada, Britain, Germany, you name it, every single country was dumping gold. And they were even saying, talking all kinds of shit, they were even saying that gold would never amount to anything, that this is the end of gold. And this was carrying on. They were dumping vast quantities of gold that were held by national governments. And only the Western world was doing it. And it's very similar to the way that the Western world's entire economy and factory system was moved by the Jews to China. It's very similar. You know, why is the Western world dumping all its gold? And by dumping the gold in large amounts, they were pushing the price down, down, down to ridiculous levels. And then you had all these so-called pundits saying, oh, well, you see, this is the end of this age of gold. You know, gold is going to be worthless. It's got no place in the future, etc., blah, blah, blah. But it's a lot like all this outsourcing of entire industries from the West to China. And I do wonder whether there is a Jewish hand in this. I must tell you, the more I study history and the more I think about things and I observe things, the more I think that the Jewish hand has been at work to actually harm the West, even to harm countries that are very pro-Jewish, like Britain. That even at the end of the day, in the final analysis, I think even the Brits and even the Americans have paid a nasty price for their support of Jewry. Anyhow, in the year 2000, I looked at this business of gold and the very low gold price. And then I thought to myself, this thing is really low. And it's been low for long. And I began to form the opinion by myself that I think it might be good to start buying into gold bit by bit. And so I began the same process. I used a mutual fund again, the same mutual fund, and I started with small amounts, and I quietly started buying into gold. Now, one of the things that I discovered with fixed purchases per month was that if you can do fixed amounts, fixed rand amounts, or fixed dollar amounts per month, then you benefit from a thing called down averaging. So what happens is, while you are buying at a fixed time period, let's say monthly, every month you buy a little bit of gold, and the next month you buy a little bit of gold, and you're buying a fixed amount each month, that when you do that, the lovely thing about that, because you're working on a fixed amount, is that when the price falls, you actually get more. And in the case of these mutual funds, you are buying portions of gold. So you're buying things to a number of decimal places. So you're not buying like a gold bar or a gold share. You're buying a point something 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 of gold. And the beauty about that is that when the price falls, you are buying more. So even if the price is quite flat and then the price goes down for a year or two, when it goes down, you're just buying more and more units. In the case of a mutual fund, these were called units. So as time goes by, you're buying more and more units because the price is going down. And then when the price actually starts picking up a bit, you've now been building up this sort of base. And when the price goes up even a little bit, you suddenly see your savings really rising. And when I started in about 2000 or 2001, for the first couple of years, nobody was even looking at gold. Nobody was saying anything. And then round about 2005, gold started moving upwards for the first time. And only then did I finally start saying, hey, look at that. My little bit of savings is really going up. Until then, it had been just a sort of a downhill and I'd just been accumulating quietly. But once it started moving up in 2005 and newspapers started writing about gold and why gold has got some value, etc., suddenly my little bit of savings was starting to move up. And it continued like this, and from 2005 to 2012, gold went on to a lovely bull market. And a bull market starts out slowly, and later on it goes wilder and wilder, and eventually it goes almost exponential. And that was the time when I made some mistakes and I lost some money. But until 2012, I was rocking. And it was just getting better and better. And then it was astounding to see how my little bit of savings was coming along. So from 2000 to 2012, I had the greatest experience of savings that I've ever had in my life. That little bit of buying steadily and putting money into gold and carrying on over a period of time, over a period of 10 years, boy, it paid off. And I was absolutely astounded at how I had gone from no savings to having a lovely amount of savings. And the only thing that tripped me up was when it went exponential, because by then I was starting to go crazy and I wanted to start trading in it and all that kind of stuff. And that's where I lost money. But the bulk of what I'd made was still in my hands. However, I must tell you, now that I've looked at the time when stocks go exponential, I will do things differently this time. Those times when markets are flying up and flying down are very dangerous, and it really isn't worth the effort trying to trade them. But after that, watching the bottom dropping out of the gold market at the end of 2012, by then I was pretty hooked on gold, and later on I started again slowly accumulating gold again. This time I did it differently. There are different ways that you can accumulate gold and silver. You can buy the physical thing, but you can also buy a thing called an ETF, an exchange traded fund, and that is very useful. Now, an ETF is a very clever computerized device whereby you have something akin to a share, to a stock, but this thing mirrors the price of the real thing. And you get very specialized ETFs that do strange and interesting things. You can have an ETF nowadays that not only goes up when gold goes up, but it can also go up at twice the rate. You get leveraged ETFs. So you can have an ETF that works like this. If gold goes up 10%, then the ETF goes up 10%. If gold goes down 5%, then the ETF goes down 5%. But you can get a leveraged ETF so that if gold goes up 10%, then the ETF goes up 20%. Of course, if gold goes down 5%, then the ETF goes down 10%. But what's nice about a leveraged ETF is that if gold is going to go up for a long period of time, let's say the price of gold doubles, then your investment would quadruple. And what's even better is you get negative ETFs. And these are the perfect thing for the day when the bottom falls out the market. So a negative ETF works in the opposite direction. So if gold goes up 10%, then the ETF goes down 10%. But if gold goes down 5%, then the ETF goes up by 5%. And with these negative ETFs, you can also get them leveraged. So if gold goes down 10%, then the ETF goes up 20%. And with these kinds of tools, you can basically trade in gold all the time. Now, those things don't yet exist for things like Bitcoin, but they do exist for gold and silver. Maybe one day we'll get ETFs for Bitcoin and cryptos. That would be really nice. So what's nice about the ETF is the ETF is nothing more than a mechanism. It's actually a very sophisticated piece of computer software, and it works in a very specific way. There are professors of economics who've worked out how these things must work in the real world, but at the end of the day, they basically mimic the gold price, and you get them for gold, for silver, for all kinds of other commodities. So you can actually trade in other commodities without actually physically owning one. And all these tools do is they mimic the price of that commodity. But if you don't feel happy with that, you can just go and buy yourself physical gold, physical silver. Or find funds or some other way of getting into gold and silver. There are many ways. But the thing that I found that really worked for me is that whenever I took a long-term view and I put a little bit of money into something with a long-term bit of steady saving on something that is going to go up over the long term, I found that the end result was good. It is the only thing that I've ever had in my life that's really worked for me. But it doesn't happen in a day, and you've got to take a long-term view. 5 years, at least, preferably 10 years. You go and you put your money in and off you go. And I have found that when it comes to stock markets and investments and things like that, I've found that it's actually easier to find something that's going to go up steadily over a long period of time than to worry about short-term moves. Short-term moves are for professionals, very risky. But because I've got an interest in things collapsing and things going wrong, I have always been interested in gold, especially as the kind of thing that you invest in when things go wrong. But we might now have something even better, and it may be Bitcoin. But gold and silver and Bitcoin are around, and that is what we'll be discussing in this video. Now, the first thing that I want to bring up is a prediction from somebody on Wall Street, and it has to do with mass unemployment in this age of COVID. So this comes from an article that was published by Bloomberg, and they are quoting somebody. And this, to me, has a sound that I think this is very likely. It's something I've been thinking about quite a bit since this COVID lockdown nonsense started. And the COVID lockdown nonsense seems to have as its goal literally the destruction of economies, and it's going to cause huge problems. Like in Africa, they were predicting in 2020 that about 30% of the people in Africa would lose their jobs across all of Africa. And you've seen the impact that it's had on the USA and other countries. So I just want to read this piece to do with mass unemployment before we get into the heart of this thing, where we'll discuss the Fed and what the Fed and stimulus is doing, which is the real driver. So here is the piece. It's from an article, and it's inside the article. The section is mass unemployment, and they're quoting somebody called Eileen Murray, former co-CEO of Bridgewater Associates. And she says the following: I think the next pandemic that's coming is the displacement of the workforce that's not being trained to participate in the economy. Dealing with that will take a lot more than a vaccine. The unskilled worker is the next pandemic. Let me just step back. First of all, I think that it's pretty clear if you have high degrees of unemployment, there are basic economic impacts that are not good for the nation. It puts an incredible strain on the economy. It usually only gets addressed through higher taxes on a smaller and smaller tax base. It increases the gaps between the haves and have-nots, which historically has caused more social unrest if it goes on for a period of time. We saw high levels of unemployment, like in the Depression, create hopelessness and despair in individuals, in families, and their communities. Let me pause there. I have wondered whether this massive smashing of the global economy is going to result in World War III, or things that lead eventually to World War III. Because when I look at this thing, the scale of this is so bad that I can't see how the nations of the world aren't going to end up with a lot of unrest, especially in the Western world itself. To me, there is a similarity between 2020 and the 1930s, that you've got this period that is going to lead to conflict. And I have wondered, have the Jews or the Rothschild Jews, have they pulled the plug on the world in an attempt to get the killing started? So anyway, let's continue. I think unemployment happens as quickly as automation displaces people from work without concurrently retraining them and retooling them for other types of work. Does that make sense? Look at the amount of money the US spends on education per capita, and look at where it places in terms of education among developed countries. There's a mismatch there. Throughout history, education has proven to be a vaccine for poverty and for the gaps between the haves and have-nots. What I'm seeing is a growing gap between the haves and have-nots. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and we're losing the middle class. To the extent that you have rising unemployment, you have people who can buy fewer goods and services. And you also have a need for the government to increase the tax base, including corporate taxes. The better way is for business, government, and educators to get together and say, A, do we all agree there's a looming problem ahead of us? And B, what are the things that we can jointly do to start working on that problem? Let me just pause and comment there. The more I watch capitalism, the more I think that socialism is the only answer. The way that Hitler did it, where he, as the government, looked at what was best for everybody, I think that is actually the only thing that makes sense. And I think none of these problems are going to be solved. So let's continue. I've been talking about the issue for the last 10 years. McKinsey did a 2013 study and found that up to $9 trillion in global wage cost can be eliminated by automating a wide range of knowledge-intensive tasks, such as analyzing customer credit ratings and providing financial advice. That's 2013. I don't know what the numbers would be today. There was also a study by the Oxford Martin Program on Technology and Employment. Only 0.5% of the US workforce is employed in industries associated with new technologies today that didn't exist at the turn of the century. And it's not just that these people aren't a significant part of these new industries. It might be the nature of the industry, but we need to find ways of getting people more involved and better trained. And I don't mean just college training. It might be training in different types of work, such as working on rebuilding infrastructure. I think it's a function of government, education, and business getting together. Let me pause there. It's not a function of all of them getting together. It's a function of government. That is how Hitler did it, and that's what works. In other words, this problem isn't going to be solved by a vaccine. It's not going to be solved by more military force or more security. It's not going to be solved by those kind of things that happen more quickly. It's going to be solved by retraining or retooling. When you take away from people the hope to realize their potential, that is the epitome of despair. Let me give you an example. Companies may have put up capital for future litigation costs. They might have to put up capital for certain regulatory things. So should regulators give companies that retrain their people a break versus companies that don't retrain and retool? There's been a lot of college graduates, and a lot of them didn't find jobs. Did we produce more college graduates than the economy needed? But I also know that we don't have enough electricians. We don't have enough plumbers. There are other skills beyond a four-year college diploma or an MBA that could be alternative ways of training or developing people for the future economy. I don't think companies will keep unproductive people around for very long. Here's what I think is hopeless. If you tell someone this is your life for the next 40 years and you'll be doing the same thing over and over again, when you take away from people the hope to realize their potential, that is the epitome of despair. Is this the best we can do societally? Is this the world we are going to leave for our children? So that's her viewpoint on what the future holds, and it's pretty miserable. And it's an American viewpoint. But I say again, if there were governments who had actual plans instead of leaving the rich to run around and run amok, then you would be in a better spot. But what you really have is the super rich running around doing all kinds of crazy things. And there is this worship of the super rich. This is a topic that also relates to Professor Quigley, who we will return to. Now, the real thing I want to start showing you are some things relating to gold and the Fed and why things are going to go up. In this chart from 2012 to 2020, you can see the price of gold. This is obviously from early in 2020. And you can see that in 2012, gold had hit its peak, which was around about $1,300, and then it crashed down. Now, there are business cycles, and these cycles are very roughly 10 years. And I found that for gold, these cycles are pretty true. So you can see that after the peak of 2012, it goes down and then it flattens out. And another simple rule of these cycles is that for a price to go up takes longer and is slower than for a price to go down. So the market crashed from 2012 and 2013, and then in 2016 it started recovering. And I was watching it, and I reckoned by 2017 it seemed to me that the market was already bottoming out. And as you can see, from about 2019 the market really started getting going. And this is still the early phase of the bull market. But what we've got is a very exceptional bull market this time round, to do with COVID and the smashing of the entire world's economy. So it's not a normal bull market. This is a very wild one. And that's what we're going to discuss. One thing I've discovered in my years and years of looking at all the problems that could happen in the future is that I have found that everybody's got an opinion. Everybody can predict the future. And 99.99% of them are all wrong. 99% of people predicting the future are wrong. So what I like to do when I can find the opportunity is I like to also see who was right. And here's an article from 2019, from August 2019. This is before COVID. and somebody had worked on a system and had come up with an idea regarding gold. So this is before COVID even existed. And this guy called Christensen wrote this article about gold prices the next 5 years. And he was saying that gold is going to go up, and I will explain why. Now, what this guy is talking about is a classic old story that the gold bugs turn to, and it's extremely relevant. You will see why when we look at the Fed statistics. So the bottom line is that fiat money, money that comes from a central bank, only has one path, and that is towards zero value. That when money is issued by a central bank or the Fed, that money in the long term is going to lose its value. That is what it's doomed to do. So this guy was showing in this image the difference between $20 in 1932 and $20 in 2018. So he says, what could you buy with $20 in 1932 versus 2018? In 1932, you could buy 480 gallons of gas, which for us in Southern Africa, in the British-speaking part of the world, is petrol. So you could buy 482 gallons of gas versus 7 gallons of gas today. You could buy 427 gallons of milk versus 6.3 gallons of milk. You could buy 675 dozen eggs versus 10 dozen eggs. You could buy 2,700 first-class stamps versus 40 first-class stamps. And so he's got this quote which says, bankers use inflation to steal your wealth and keep you working for less. This is the absolute truth. Absolute truth. Your savings actually is being stolen from you through this process. Everything that you've worked for, you are actually having it stolen from under your nose. And the process is inflation. That's how they steal your money. And the rich are stealing your money. The super rich are stealing your money. So that's the difference between $20 then and $20 now. Now let me show you the very basis of this model and why this model has so much value. In this chart that you see here, he's showing the price of gold, the annual price of gold, and the calculated price of gold from 1971 all the way through to January 2023. So using his model, and this model ties back to the Fed, you can see the spike in the gold price, because gold only got a sort of a free market price back in 1971. And by 1979, 1980, gold was going up like crazy. And then you see that period of time that I was talking about into the 1990s, the 1980s to 1990s, where the gold price declined for 20 years. For 20 years, the gold price declined. It just got lower and lower and lower. And you can see it got down to a real low value by about the year 2000. And this is the period I was telling you about when I started getting in and buying up gold for my second attempt at gold. And it worked out really well. And you can see that from about after the year 2000, until 2012, gold shot through the roof. So due to all this dumping of gold and all this nonsense, gold at a point was as low as below $400 an ounce. I'm not sure if it was as low as like 350 or something like that, but it was down there in the 300s. And you can see that it went from below 400 to a spike of up to $1,600. So in other words, the gold price multiplied fourfold in a period of 10 years. Fourfold. And this was after 9/11. And the situation then was nothing as bad as it is now. So the price of gold increased by 4 times its value in a period of about 10 to 12 years. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about now here. And you'll see the basis for it, which is the Fed pumping out money. Now, in order to understand why gold was going through the roof, take a look at this chart. This chart is from 2004 to 2020. And the real issue here is what they call quantitative easing. And basically, this is just the printing of money. That's all. It's the printing of money. It goes by various names. Nowadays, they also call it stimulus and all these junk names. But at the end of the day, they're just pumping out money. Now, I've mentioned to people many times that you must never underestimate the event that happened in 2008. In 2008, the world's entire banking system was going to collapse. The entire, I repeat this to you because it's very important. In 2008, the world's entire banking system was going to collapse. It had to do with them lending money to all these non-whites in America who couldn't afford homes, etc., and they were bad loans. And this caused the entire banking system to get ready to collapse. The situation was extremely bad, and that's when they borrowed the $700 billion to bail out the rich scum who'd been lending money to all these blacks who couldn't afford to buy homes and who were bad risks. So that is QE1. The system is essentially sick, and you can see that the Fed's total assets is constantly increasing. If you look from 2004 to 2008, you'll see the Fed was constantly increasing its assets, constantly printing money. And even that wasn't good enough. Then the whole thing was going to collapse. And that is when things went totally haywire in 2008. So then they got the common taxpayer to save the rich scum worth $700 billion, and that's QE1. But you can see the system is sick. System is sick, and they ended up with QE2, and then the system continued to get worse. After 2013, it got worse and worse. They seem to have sort of gotten it under control, and it looked like it was actually recovering in some way, which is quite amazing. And then comes COVID. And there you can see COVID, and suddenly we're back to square one. Now, what this chart doesn't show you, this chart is from March. This is only March 2020. In 2020, Trump pumped out something like $9 trillion in stimulus. You are only seeing the first $1 trillion of $9 trillion. So this thing shoots right off the charts here. It shoots right off the charts. What happened in 2020 is beyond all imagination. It makes 2008 look like a walk in the park. 2008 and its $700 billion is nothing. Trump had to pump out $9 trillion. And Biden has already said he's going to pump out another $1.9 trillion. And I'll bet you even that is not the end of it. So what you've got is you've got an unprecedented collapse of the system. But the way that the government is saving the system is simply by getting the Fed to just pump out more money. So instead of the banks collapsing, instead of the stock market collapsing, what they are doing these days is they're just creating more money. And they're just creating tons and tons of money on a scale bigger than you can imagine. In the year 2020, they printed 22% of all the money that's ever been printed in American history. They printed it in 1 year. So the bottom line is that the pumping out and printing of fiat money is what drives up stock market prices. It's what drives up all prices, because you've got tons and tons of money chasing a very limited amount of goods. So it pushes up everything. You're heading into inflation and maybe later hyperinflation. So what you've got is lots and lots of money being printed, and the reason they're printing it is to stop the stock market from collapsing. That's the main thing that they're trying to do. They're trying to pretend everything is good as normal, but it isn't good and things are bad. And so what happens is this money finds its way into other assets. Initially, its goal is to save the stock market, but this money will go into gold. It will go into silver, it will go into Bitcoin. It has already done these things. But the key driver is this thing, the Federal Reserve buying up stuff. And the Federal Reserve is buying up assets, it's buying up things on the stock market. The Federal Reserve has gone to a point where it owns about 30% of the US economy already. The Fed owns a big chunk of the US economy already, because things otherwise would collapse. So the super rich are making money and a killing like you've never seen. So where does the money go to? And this chart is from 2007 to 2020. And so the green line on the chart is the Fed Treasury and MBS holdings. And then the S&P 500 is the stock market. And so in the article it said, it's hard to deny the correlation between Fed liquidity and stock prices. In other words, whenever the Fed is busy printing money and creating credit, that by itself pushes up the stock market prices. So the green line drives the black line. That's the bottom line, is that the green line, the printing of money, causes the black line, which is the prices of stocks on the stock market, it pushes them up. And notice, in 2018, as they were easing off on this, suddenly the stock market started crashing big time, and then the new stimulus had to come in. But the new stimulus, like I've said, is way off the charts. It's way beyond anything else. It makes the previous stimulus look like nothing. And of course the question is, if their method of saving the stock market is to print more money, how much money do you require each time this happens? Because this is now happening approximately 10 years apart. This means that we had a crash in 2008 and they solved the problem temporarily by printing a bunch of money, $700 billion. Then in 2020, which is 12 years later, you got a new problem. And how much money do they need this time? Well, they need more than 10 times as much money as last time. They've already spent $9 trillion, and Biden has promised another $1.9 trillion, and I bet you that won't be the last of it. So they've already spent more than 10 times as much as they did previously. So what is going to happen 10 years from now? Well, I don't see any reason why this won't continue going up exponentially. That in 10 years' time, in 2030, when the next thing crashes, or 2032 when it crashes, won't they be needing $100 trillion? I really don't think that is crazy. I think that is very viable. That is very realistic. Because what you've got are stock markets going exponential and then crashing. And the way that they get them going up again is they pump money in exponentially. So this whole thing is totally unsustainable. And what it means is that the future is a future of hyperinflation that is coming. Now, when you've got tons and tons of money chasing goods, then the only safe thing to put your money into is physical goods, things that have got a limited supply. And that is where gold comes in and silver comes in. They are traditional places where people go. However, Bitcoin has got an even more restricted supply than gold. Bitcoin, unlike gold and silver, doesn't have to be mined. So it is created electronically. So in the case of Bitcoin, you know Bitcoin's supply because it's got fixed rules. It's got fixed rules that never change. Unless they were to change the rules one day, Bitcoin has got an ever slower growth rate. And it has got a physical limitation of how many Bitcoins there can be in the world anyway. So what it means is that with Bitcoin, you've got more and more money chasing Bitcoin, and the growth of Bitcoin is totally limited. Unless they were to change the rules of Bitcoin, Bitcoin could have greater value than gold, silver, or anything else. And they've been trying to destroy Bitcoin, but the problem with trying to destroy Bitcoin is that more and more people and more money has been going into Bitcoin. Some time back, I heard for the first time that Bitcoin now had $1 billion in Bitcoin. They've tried to crash Bitcoin. There are people who came and dumped $50 million of Bitcoin in a single day, and it caused some mayhem. But Bitcoin is growing and becoming more and more solid. And the latest numbers are that there is $1 trillion in Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is now solid and established. And while the prices may fluctuate, it is turning out to be very stable. And its long-term future is fantastic because you've got the Fed just pumping out money and people are starting to put money in Bitcoin, just like they're putting into gold and silver. And therein lies the real opportunity for Bitcoin. Bitcoin, gold, silver, as well as physical things, houses, property, etc. All these things are things to put your money into. Get your money into things that are physical, and you will see how well it's going to work for you. Though the real thing they're trying to prop up is the stock market, but what you've got is this side effect, and the side effect is that other people are taking money and chucking it into other asset classes. And the asset classes we're interested in are gold and silver and Bitcoin. Now, gold has always been the asset for tough times, for when things go wrong, when there are emergencies, when there are wars. People go and they stick their money in gold. Silver is sort of related to gold in that sense. It's like the poor man's gold. But Bitcoin could be a very interesting new kid on the block that might even work better. So in 2019, this guy had a model, and this is what he predicted from his model. He said, conclusions. Model tells us that gold prices are inexpensive for the first 5 months of 2019 and slightly undervalued at the end of July 2019. Gold prices should rise in the next 5 years. Then he says that in 5 years' time, he thinks gold could be at $2,500 or even $4,500. So he's predicting for 2024. And then he says a spike much higher, perhaps to $10,000, is not unlikely. He says this model is not a prediction or guarantee. It is a valuation tool. It could lose accuracy tomorrow, but it has a nearly five-decade history of success. On my website, I published this article from Money Week from 30 December 2019, again, before COVID. And this was also an analysis. It also had to do with prices and the Fed and all these different things, all these long-term trends. And this guy was saying, in 2019, before COVID, before any kind of stimulus, he said, here's how gold could rise above $7,000 an ounce. And I was very impressed with his logic. He says, I reiterated that gold is in a bull market. I suggested that a bullish target for $7,166 is both logical and plausible. And this is also a long-term prediction. I think it's until the 2030s or so. But what we're looking at are the 2020s, and that's what we're talking about. But this is before COVID. And I was very impressed with this. I'm not going to go through all his logic and how he arrived at it. But this guy was very thorough, and it was similar to that other article from 2019, from earlier in 2019, where the guys are studying the long-term trends and they're showing certain correlations and they're saying, look, this is where this is going to go. But COVID and the lockdowns have added masses of money into this whole thing. Masses of money, $9 trillion, which wasn't there before. So it's going to inflate the whole thing massively. But remember, whatever applies to gold also applies to silver, also applies to Bitcoin. But where people look at gold is the sort of daddy of safe havens. However, these other things will also go up. And Bitcoin is one of them, because you've got huge amounts of money chasing a limited amount of goods. In fact, I saw in an article that I'd published on my website that gold production in South Africa had undergone its sharpest and deepest drop in 39 years. So that's also good. So the less new gold coming onto the market, the higher the prices are going to go. Of course, once the prices get going, then they'll be finding more companies and places that can mine gold in other countries. That is how these trends normally go. But even with all that happening, the price is still going to go up because there's so much freaking credit and money that's just been created out of thin air. I'm going to show you the first video. This is a short video. This is from CNBC. And again, I like sometimes to grab things that are a bit older, then you can see what somebody has been saying. In this case, it's a guy named Frank Holmes. And in this program, you've got CNBC interviewing two guys. One is a bull and one is a bear. In stock market terminology, a bull is somebody who believes the price is going to go up, and a bear is somebody who believes the price is going to go down. So they've got two guys that they're interviewing, and the one is Frank Holmes, who is a bull, and he explains why he believes gold is going to go to $4,000. And then there's another guy who gives his reasons why he doesn't think so. And the guy who doesn't think so, he is focusing on the COVID vaccine. He's constantly talking about the COVID vaccine and how the COVID vaccine is going to solve problems. But I think that Frank Holmes has got a lot of good points. This interview was from the 12th of August 2020. And at that point in time, gold had been shooting up very sharply. And Frank Holmes tells people that what you're going to do is you're going to get a dip now, and then it's going to fall back somewhat, and then gold is going to take off again. So that was from August, and he's dead right. At this time that I'm making this video, which is the 18th of January 2021, he's dead right. The gold price did pull back, it did drop. It dropped all the way back from 2,000 down to 1850. It has fallen back a lot, and you can see that the next episode of bull market activity is starting up already at this time. So he's quite right. This guy sounds solid to me. But listen to his prediction. His prediction is gold to 4,000 in a couple of years' time, which means more than double the current price. And I think this guy is telling it correctly. And listen to him. He's constantly talking about the money that's being printed. This is the main driving force, and he talks about that at length.
Let's get to our pair of guests. Yung-Yu Ma is Chief Investment Strategist at BMO Wealth Management, joining us live out of Portland, Oregon. Frank Holmes, further south, the CEO and Chief Investment Officer, CIO at U.S. Global Investors down in San Antonio, Texas. Gentlemen, both of you, good evening. Your side, thank you for your time and appreciate it very much. Frank, I want to start with you simply because your number, the number you're throwing out there, $4,000, double where we are now. In 3 years' time, state your case.
Well, if you just take a look at what the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, how it's ballooned, and what's necessary to turn this economy around. The last cycle, 2008, 2009, was $3 trillion. This is going to probably push about $10 trillion. And if you look from back in 2008, 2009, gold was between $700 and $800, and 3 years later, it went to $1,900. If you take a look at this cycle and take a look at this incredible growth as a percentage of the GDP, then it's quite easy to see gold going to $4,000.
Wow. Okay. Why? Over to you. Are you sitting there listening to Frank and going, I don't know what it is, but I want some of what Frank is smoking, or are you just simply less bearish or less bullish, but still bullish?
Well, there are definitely a lot of positive factors working for gold right now, and that's why it's been up 30-some percent this year. Those are undeniable. Interest rates are low. The budget deficits are massive. As Frank said, the Fed is very active in providing fiscal or monetary stimulus. And, of course, we have a pandemic, which is raging and causing a lot of concern. So there are a lot of factors that support gold. We're just cautious extrapolating these current factors too far out into the future, especially when we know there are two big events on the horizon that could change that trajectory. One is, of course, the vaccine developments, and the other is the election toward the end of the year. We think both of those, but especially the vaccine, has potential to shift some of those positive factors that are working right now in the favor of gold.
Frank, if you are so bullish on gold, what would you advise people to invest in as a way to play that movement to the upside in the bullion price? I mean, for example, would you go for individual stocks? Would you go for a fund? Would you just buy some gold bars and stick them under your pillow? What would you be doing?
Well, for the past 18 months, we've been in a secular bull market in gold, where the 50-day crossed above the 200-day. And you've had these incredible flurries. So right now, we're up 2 standard deviations over the past 60 trading days, and that's due for a correction. That's happened several times over these past 18 months. But what's really important is that when you look at this long-term picture since the year 2000, gold has been up 80% of the time and is up over 300% outer performance of the S&P 500. And year-to-date, it's outperformed the S&P 500. So gold is an important asset class that investors should look at least 10% in gold and rebalance once a year. And what's interesting in this super cycle is that gold stocks are now starting to show free cash flow yields. We monitor and track 100 global gold producers, and this is the first time in over a decade. And this is very bullish. In fact, gold stocks have far outperformed.
Right now, gold is really pushing that level of sort of peak price in real terms, inflation-adjusted terms. So we do think risk is building. We don't think the rug is going to be pulled out from gold imminently. But as gold price increases, and you look at that chart that you just put up, you can see an almost parabolic-looking move recently. We do think risks are building, especially when you have on the horizon some of these changes, including a vaccine, which could change the trajectory of interest rates. It could change the confidence in the U.S. economy and really shift some of that perception away from gold.
So why are you willing to stick your neck out? Frank's got a 4,000 target 3 months out, 3 years out. What about yourself?
3 years out.
I would pick inflation. So let's say if we're running about 1.5% inflation a year, say 5% higher from now. I think if we're thinking about longer term projections, we really have to focus on where we are today, which is at the very highest end range of the price of gold in real terms. And really what we can expect on a longer term basis is inflation-like returns.
Inflation-like returns. Interesting. So, Frank, that 4,000 target, what does this assume in terms of what happens to dollar? Obviously what's been intact and maybe even driving the gold trade has been this, we're back to this traditional inverse relationship between gold and dollar where they move in opposite directions. If you see gold going to 4,000, it sounds as though dollar's going to get destroyed.
No, I really don't think it's going to get destroyed. It's because it's on a relative basis. This is really World War III, and the enemy is invisible, and it's the coronavirus. So you're seeing the G20 finance ministers and central banks working together like a cartel, and they're all printing trillions of dollars. And other things that are really significant, we've never seen the U.S. turn around and the Federal Reserve come in and buy ETFs. Buying muni bonds to get yields down, buying corporate bonds. We've not seen to this level where central banks are printing money at a zero interest rate. And a zero interest rate, gold becomes a very, very attractive asset class. And that's what Ray Dalio has always commented about. And he's always had this sort of a position, the largest hedge fund manager in the world. So I don't think that we're going to see gold goes to 4,000. I think it goes against all other countries' currencies. When Greenspan retired, the Federal Reserve was 6% of the GDP. Now it's over 30%. So one has to put these things in context. It's not one country versus the other. It is a sort of global printing of money, the debasement of currencies that's happening all around the world. And you're seeing real estate rising in the U.S. You're seeing art rising in the U.S. So gold is an asset class, and you're also seeing Ethereum and Bitcoin. They're also rising substantially as alternative asset classes. So there seems this debasement is an important theme.
What do you think about that, Yung-Yu? Would you like to respond to this this theme of debasement? And what are your assumptions about fiat currencies?
Well, again, I think if we look at where we are today, and a lot of that's true, it's very true. But if we think about where we're going to be a year from now, and we are very optimistic on the vaccine developments. And we do think there's an inflection on the horizon. We think that's going to improve the confidence in the U.S. economy. We think that's going to shift the direction of deficits. The U.S. is borrowing at very low interest rates right now. They're rock bottom. That does support gold as well. But again, we could see a lift in interest rates as well as we get a vaccine and those growth prospects improve. So our concern is really thinking about where the risk lies. And that risk is building. If we look at even sentiment figures now, sentiment for gold market timers is in the highest 1% of the past 20 years for their projections for gold and for their recommendations for gold. So again, risk is building. It's not that it looks like it's going to fall out of bed tomorrow. But as we think about going forward, it's a more and more challenging place to be, especially given that we expect a vaccine on the horizon. And there could even be increased confidence in the U.S. economy after the elections.
Yeah, boy, I mean, isn't that ironic, huh? Basically, recovery, why you think, is probably the big risk hanging over further upside for gold. If that's the case, then it sounds as though it sounds like you could probably make a pretty strong case for starting to rotate into silver or starting to position in silver, because, I mean, that is an industrial metal. That is the metal that's going to benefit probably much more when a real recovery gains traction, no?
Oh, we do consider silver more of an industrial than a precious metal. That's certainly true. And you can see industrial metals across the board are quite strong. Copper's been strong. There are some expectations if we get this better growth following a vaccine that industrial metals should provide well, because a lot of the stimulus that's being enacted now will have long-term lingering effects. It won't go away. That stimulus won't be shut off the moment we get a vaccine or the moment that populations are widely vaccinated. So the stimulus will be longer lasting. We do expect better growth trajectory, and probably industrial metals are a better place than precious metals.
Yeah, Frank, come in on this.
Well, I think the important part is silver. Silver is like a warrant on gold. And every time we've had this move in the price of gold of 10%, then there's a catch up and we see silver running 15%. So the DNA of volatility of silver is 50% more than gold. And if we do get this industrial boom, which I'm very positive about because the PMIs have turned positive in Asia and in many of the countries in Eastern Europe, then copper. You want to be long copper. And any supply restrictions out of Chile, then that automatically is a big, big factor. And I think there's much more leverage. We've had peak supply in gold. And in fact, there's another comment I've made on it. It's really gone into detail. But we also have it in copper for many years. And we had it for 7 years in palladium, and then palladium exploded over an 18-month period. So I think you could see this supply restriction happening in copper and in gold, and copper gold porphyry deposits are going to become important. But in the short term, expect a correction and back up the truck, because if you're not long, you'll be wrong.
Okay, get ready for Dr. Copper then.
Back up the truck. Okay, we're going to get you both back on. We'll get you both back on in about a year's time and see how your forecasts, bull, bear, are tracking. Thank you so much for that.
So this is what Max Keiser looks like. He's 60 years old now, but he's got some interesting background. He was a filmmaker. I think he was also in journalism. But what is really interesting is he's got a patent for some software process that he's invented. So he is somebody who thinks ahead. And this guy's been pushing Bitcoin for the last 10 years. And he's been proven totally right. Bitcoin has gone to levels that nobody thought was possible. And Bitcoin now has $1 trillion. There is $1 trillion in Bitcoin already. So that shows you Bitcoin is becoming very successful, and even big companies, even investment firms, are starting to put money into Bitcoin. And this guy was way ahead of his time in pushing Bitcoin. So people have asked, how much money is Max Keiser himself worth? He's not an elite person. He doesn't come from the super rich, but this is what I did manage to find out about him. It says, as of January 2021, he has a net worth of $10 million. He made money as a host, anchor, and producer of several shows and TV series. Thus, his determination and consistent hard work have won him popularity and wealth. His net worth includes all his possessions and earnings. So he's not super rich, but he's also not a normal guy. He's made $10 million, which is a pretty serious amount of money. So what follows now is a show that he did recently. And in this show, he's interviewed and they talk about how he had the best prediction for Bitcoin previously on a previous show a year or more before, and what are his predictions for 2021 for Bitcoin, for gold, and for silver. So listen to this, and at the end of it I will comment on what his predictions are and what I think. But this guy could be ahead of everybody. However, I will also discuss some of the downsides, etc. So I don't regard him as like a total guru. If all his predictions turn out to be right, I'll be most surprised. But even if he's partially right, he is still going to give us enormous guidelines. You will see the implications of what he says. It's very similar to what these other guys are saying. But he goes into more detail and he gives you some input on a bunch of things.
To years ago, my guest made the most accurate forecast for how Bitcoin would close off 2020 amongst all the popular Bitcoin pundits and advocates in the world. Max Keiser had forecasted $20,000 Bitcoin by the end of 2020. So how is he expecting Bitcoin to close off in 2021? He has chosen this platform, Stansberry Research, and my show to give his most coveted and highly anticipated Bitcoin forecast for the year. This is the show to watch if you care about Bitcoin. Welcome back. Happy New Year, Max Keiser.
Oh, Daniela, it's always a pleasure to see you, and Happy New Year to you and your viewers. And I see your show is growing in popularity exponentially, almost as fast as Bitcoin.
big time, yes. And like I said, I'm very happy that you've come around and have decided to give me your Bitcoin forecast, and we will get to it in a bit. But first, I've prepared something special for you, Max, because this is not an ordinary show. This is a very special show. And I've created a game for you called Seen and Overheard on the Street about Bitcoin. Common things we often hear about Bitcoin. I want to get your take on it.
Yeah, all well, right. Before we begin, I'm going to make a statement.
Go ahead.
This is salt. Okay. Now, what does that have to do with Bitcoin? And I'll tell you what it has to do with Bitcoin. The British Empire was defeated by Indians under Mahatma Gandhi because they made their own salt. And back in 2009, the beginning of Bitcoin, it was the cypherpunks and everybody who was objecting to central bank authoritarianism who got together and said, we're going to make our own money. We're going to make our own money. It's called Bitcoin, and it's passive resistance, and it's going to topple the central bank empire, the central banks around the world. I predict one of my predictions will be one of the major central banks in the world will collapse in 2021. They're highly leveraged, as your guest Jim Rickards points out many times. These banks are leveraged 50, 60, 70 to 1. They're leveraged more than long-term capital management was when long-term capital management was at its highest point of leverage. So Rickards would know about this stuff. And one of them is going to collapse in 2021, and that will start an avalanche out of fiat money and paper money, and the top beneficiary of that will be Bitcoin. That's one of the catalysts for a price appreciation in 2021. But my point is this, Daniela, Bitcoin is a protest against fiat money, central banks, authoritarianism. And the way the protest works is the cypherpunks and everyone involved in Bitcoin, essentially, we made our own money. It's perfect money. It has nothing to do with the state. You've separated for the first time in history, state from money. It's never been done before, ever. And it has been finished. It has been completed. It has been figured out, and it's been launched, and it's out there for 10, 11 years, and it's working. And the nation state, as we know it, is going to dissolve. Central banks are going to dissolve, and fiat money is going to go the way of all fiat money has gone over 300 years. Not a single fiat money, paper money scheme has lasted over the past 300 years. They've all gone to zero or lost 99% of their purchase power. So should be no shock to anyone that the U.S. dollar is going to go to zero. The British pound looks particularly horrible. That's definitely going to go to zero. All the fiat money is going to go to zero. And of course, the chief beneficiary of that would be Bitcoin. And these are the catalysts. These are the catalysts to see this price projection and why, you know, when we get into the numbers, you'll understand more why I have the number that I have.
Yeah, and I'm excited and I can't wait to get to the number. And I agree with you that I think a big portion of it is a protest against fiat currency. But on the other side of the equation, a lot of it is people who are looking at this price of Bitcoin just skyrocketing, thinking, I need to jump on this train and get rich with it.
Right. Well, it's a magical kind of metamorphosis that turns greed into altruism. You know, Bitcoin attracts a lot of greedy people who want to make money trading on Bitcoin. But as they are, they're defunding central banks and they're defunding fiat money and they're defunding the nation state. So it's a very interesting technology that turns greed into the hardest money ever known in human history. So the greedy folks, we need the greedy folks. You know, we need people come for the greed. They stay for the revolution.
I think that people's concern, and we'll get to it in my game that I'm excited to play, Seen and Overheard About Bitcoin, is that, you know, it's, you know, and you've heard this before, I'm not saying it, this is the ultimate bubble. When your 12-year-old nephew, this happened to me this weekend, came over and asked me, you know, Auntie, how do I buy Bitcoin?
Well, the biggest bubble in the world by far is the bond bubble. So it's in a 300-year, it took 300 years for the bonds in the UK to get this extended and into a bubble. It took over 240 years for the American debt market to get into this bubble. It's so far in a bubble that's gone negative. Interest rates in the sovereign bond market are now actually negative. So that not even Bernie Madoff, you know, got his Ponzi scheme to that level of extremity. So that is by far the biggest bubble in the world is the U.S. bond market and the sovereign debt market. Then you have behind that, I would say, the fiat money currency. The U.S. dollar is in an enormous bubble. You've got a lot of still some property markets are in a huge bubble. And probably the one asset in the world now that's undervalued, that's not even very close to getting into a valuation that it should be commensurate with the rest of the markets, would be Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the cheapest asset in the world you can buy. As Paul Tudor Jones has said, it's the fastest horse in the race. Paul Tudor Jones doesn't have to say much to make a huge statement. He said that the Bitcoin price is mispriced. You know, he said the Bitcoin price is, whenever he sees something as mispriced as Bitcoin, he gets excited to see that. And what he means by that is what I've just said, essentially, is that everything else pretty much is in a bubble. Bitcoin is one of the only assets probably that's not a bubble. It's in the most undervalued asset probably in the world today.
Yeah, and I think that's such a mind shift and a hard concept for many to grasp, what you're saying right there, Max.
Right. Well, as I said, the central banks are in a bubble. I mean, if you have a 50, 60, 70 time leverage is an enormous bubble. You've got stocks trading at 1,000 times earnings, 1,500 times earnings, Tesla stock trading at over 1,000 times earnings. I mean, by any standard measure of valuation, that would be bubble
right.
territory.
All right.
You know, you've got a lot of bubbles in asset prices that have been fueled by central bank printing. You know, here's the chart of M2 money supply growth, which is growing at 20% a year. Bitcoin price is staying ahead of that M2 growth. It's the only asset that's you got true price discovery. That's reflecting true money printing. Gold is not doesn't have good price discovery in gold because it's been almost 100% financialized. That's why gold is lagging as badly as it is, and it's not a good store of value in this type of money printing. This is also why corporations like MicroStrategy under Michael Saylor have said, look, the real inflation rate is 20% a year. It's not 1.5% a year. It's not 2% a year. That's a government-published number that doesn't take into consideration the massive asset valuations that are popping, that are in bubble territory. That is very convenient for those who are doing the printing. You know, is it coincidence that the people who do the printing of the money are the ones that are benefiting the most from the printing of the money? No, that's by design. It's incredibly corrupt. But the real number is 20%. And Bitcoin is true price discovery that's outside of the control of central banks and government because you've separated government from perfect money. So you have real price discovery. And Bitcoin is telling us that this 20% money supply growth per year is resulting in a hyperinflationary collapse of the U.S. dollar against Bitcoin. Let me repeat that. The U.S. dollar is in a hyperinflationary collapse right now against Bitcoin. And the markets, that's what the markets are telling us. You know, I'm a free marketeer. I look at markets. You know, when markets tell me stuff, they send signals. I read those signals and I invest accordingly. And that's what the market's telling us, that price discovery in Bitcoin is accurate and true. Price discovery in these other assets is completely manipulated, and it's demonstrably manipulated. JP Morgan just paid huge fines for manipulating the gold price. That used to be a conspiracy theory.
And then they made all their money back. The right. same amount they paid in fines, they made back this year.
Right, JP Morgan, they paid $1 billion in fines for manipulating gold, and they paid the fine by, you guessed it, manipulating gold.
So we're going to talk about gold a little later, and you mentioned a good point there. But I want to get into the nitty gritty of Bitcoin here, And the point of the game is really to bring up, you know, things we commonly hear about Bitcoin. So with more and more interest now on Bitcoin, you saw it making the front page of the Financial Times. Everyone wants to know about Bitcoin. I want you to dispel or poo-poo or agree with things we commonly hear about Bitcoin. So here we go. Seen and overheard on the street at Katz's Deli. Bitcoin is the world's first distributed, decentralized Ponzi scheme. Max Kaiser.
It's demonstrably, provably not a Ponzi scheme. As a matter of fact, it's a reverse Ponzi scheme. In a Ponzi scheme, the base of the Ponzi scheme has to constantly get wider and bigger. The new money has to keep coming in to pay the investors off who have gotten into the Ponzi scheme early. That's a Ponzi scheme. As Charles Ponzi created the Ponzi scheme with his scheme of, I believe it was stamps, and they had a stamp collecting Ponzi scheme, and that's where we get the term from. But and we now also look at Bernie Madoff was running a bit of a Ponzi scheme in that he was paying off investor returns with the new money coming in. Now let's look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin is actually the opposite. Every 4 years, the amount of money that's mined on a daily basis shrinks by 50% in what's called the halving. So we started off with 50 coins per distribution on the mining output per 10 minutes. And then we had a halving down to 25, and then a halving down to 12.5, and a halving down to 6.25. So actually, it's a reverse Ponzi scheme. The amount of money that's entering the system is shrinking, not expanding. So that's a very simple point. And anyone who calls it a Ponzi scheme, A, doesn't know what a Ponzi scheme is, and B, has never looked at Bitcoin for more than 5 seconds, or just accepted like a Nouriel Roubini tweet as if that has a meaning, but he's never looked at it either. So that's demonstrably, provably wrong.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just, if you know what 2 + 2 = 4, then you know that this is not a Ponzi scheme if you look at a definition of a Ponzi scheme and you look at the distribution of coins within Bitcoin. It's so simple that any 9-year-old would look at this for 5 minutes and tell you exactly the same thing. But again, we have a mainstream media that doesn't qualify to have the intelligence of a 9-year-old. They simply repeat propaganda points because they're propagandists.
Oh, seen and overheard on the street. The only thing Bitcoin has going for it is a rising price. Without it, it would tank.
Well, that's again, not true. So what Bitcoin has for it is that it's a savings technology, the best savings technology ever invented, the best hard money that's ever been invented. And humans have a real need for hard money to do trade. Humans like to trade and they want hard money. That's what over the thousands of years, gold kind of evolved to be a great way to trade in something that had store of value so that I accepted your gold today for goods and services, I could re-spend that gold in the future. And you couldn't do that so well with beads and shells or, you know, different things that have been tried for money as money for many years. And gold was doing a pretty good job for a long time. Then Bitcoin came around and it's doing a better job than gold because it's scarcer than gold. So it's harder than gold. It's absolute scarcity of 21 million coins. Gold is inflating at, let's say, 2% a year. And we know that if the price of gold goes up, the technology to find more gold will also increase. So that number could go 3, 4, 5, 6% a year, just like we saw in the energy markets. It's not, the gold supply is elastic. It's not inelastic. It's not finite. It's elastic. So that's a problem. Number two, it's unlike gold, it's unconfiscatable. When I was saying Bitcoin, you cannot confiscate Bitcoin. You cannot censor Bitcoin. It's portable, more portable than gold. It's more divisible than gold. So it's on every single key point that you like gold, Bitcoin does a better job. It's hard money and it's a store of value. That's its primary purpose. That's its number one goal. Why is it going up in price? Is because we live in a world of hundreds of trillions and quadrillion of fiat money that is destroying people's lives, destroying economies, creating wealth and income gaps that are creating social unrest, and it feeds malfeasance. You know, every time the U.S. government makes a stupid mistake, they paper it over by printing more money. Same thing with all these other G20 countries. since 1971, since we went off the gold standard. If you make a mistake, you make a blunder with your policy, just paper it over with more printed money. Oh, by the way, does that create more cantillionaires at the top who then control more of government and the corruption goes wider and the people at the bottom are getting poorer and their purchasing power is weakening? Yes, it does. Tell that to the people who are printing the money and putting it into their pocket. They don't care.
This game is getting you fired up. When new buyers stop coming in, then Tether buys and manipulates the price higher.
Tether is 7% or less of the market. It was big in 2017. That was a talking point from 2017. It was resurrected recently. I think Rubini likes to keep talking Tether, Tether, Tether. Again, no, he has no understanding of this at all. He's never done any research on it. He just farts into his Twitter account and expects everyone to think that his farts smell really good. But guess what, Nouriel? Your farts stink, and your logic is broken, and you haven't even spent 3 minutes studying this, and how NYU keeps you employed. As an NYU alumnus, I've sent a few letters to them saying he needs to be fired, gotten rid of immediately. He's a plague at NYU. He's embarrassing alumnus like myself at NYU with his utter contempt for civility and, well, maybe not civility, but intelligence, and it's gross, and he should be gotten rid of. I don't care if he's got tenure. So Tether is not a factor. Tether is not in play. It was brought about in 2017 as a way to trade in and out of Bitcoin into a U.S. dollar surrogate. It's basically a money market. You know, money markets have a use. People trade in and out of a money market. If I have an account and full of stocks and I sell my stock and I go into a money market until I find a new stock. Same thing with a Tether or a stable coin or a U.S. dollar type cryptocurrency. It's just it's like a money market. And like in the money markets in 2008, remember, there was a threat that it would break the buck because money markets are not, you know, exactly 100% a guaranteed piece of paper either. There's counterparty risk with basic money market account. Hello, if this is news to you, wake up. Your money market has counterparty risk. So does Tether. So does every security in the world. So does every exchange in the world. The only thing without counterparty risk is Bitcoin. Bitcoin has no counterparty risk. That's something else gold doesn't have. Gold has counterparty risk. Gold has verification risk. Gold is expensive. It costs 7% a year to store it, to verify it, to transport it. Gold is expensive on all counts.
I'm kind of surprised, and like I said, we'll get to gold in a bit, but this anger towards gold, because you own gold, you own silver, and last time we spoke, you liked gold.
I'm not angry. I'm simply getting into the groove, baby. I'm funky.
Yeah, no, I love
it. I'm funky, not angry. Funk is different than angry. You wouldn't say James Brown is angry. He's funky, right? He's going down that path, right? I'm funky, baby.
Let's angry.
Let's get on the path. So okay. Gold is, yes, I own gold, I own silver, and I've owned them for a long time. I started buying gold at $400 an ounce. I started buying silver at $500 an ounce, and I've got a lot of silver. I'll wager you that I've got more gold and silver bullion than Peter Schiff has personally.
Would you sell it and just go all in Bitcoin?
A lot of it is actually hard to get to. It's hard to move it. It's sitting in a warehouse, and it's actually difficult to sell gold and silver. This is why it's not great. I've tried to sell it and move it and do a lot of stuff to it, but it's actually not that easy to do.
Why? Do you have it outside the U.S.?
Without going into particulars, Daniela, it's not easy to move, transport, et cetera. And I have sold some, but it's not an easy asset class to deal with.
Okay, I can get two more in here. I like this one because I'm a culprit of it being part of the media. Okay, Bitcoin, it can melt down, but you can't melt it down. Bitcoins are not shiny, golden, and metallic as media has you believe. Bitcoins are just 32 byte numbers, nothing more than that. And when the market crashes, you can't melt them down or use them as jewelry or for electrical circuits.
Well, you said like two or three different things there. But I'll try to unpack it as best
I can. It was a long sentence I overheard. But I think the point is it wrong to depict Bitcoin, and I'm a culprit of it, as this shiny gold object that we show in our B-roll when it's just 32-byte numbers that you can't really do anything with?
No, well, you should, in your B-roll, you should show Bitcoin as a what's called a coin kite, a digital device that holds Bitcoin. It's a company up in Canada, and it's a way to it's the equivalent of a shiny gold ounce. But it's just the media lazily likes to put up gold coins to depict Bitcoin, and so that's their problem, not my problem.
Okay, let's end with this one. Overheard on 72nd Street, New York City. Max Kaiser is either Satoshi Nakamoto or Kaiser Soze. I heard it.
I'm Satoshi Kaiser Nakamoto Soze.
All right.
No, I'm not Satoshi Nakamoto. And okay. The cypherpunk 20-year history that preceded Bitcoin is well documented. There are four or five attempts to create a Bitcoin that goes back 20 years. Adam Back, for example, is involved in one of these e-cash types of or e-gold. And even back in 1995, 96, I created the virtual specialist technology. So I actually have a patent on the first digital currency in the world. And that patent was sold to Cantor Fitzgerald on Wall Street. And they use it and they make hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue on that patent. And so I'm quite familiar with this whole history and this technology and the software. But I'm not the guy who wrote the white paper in 2008. And Kaiser Soze is more, I would say, to my liking as an archetype for Max Kaiser because Kaiser Soze was the thing you never saw coming, but just obliterated everything in its path.
Okay. On that note, Bitcoin is for the people, by the people. So I asked our many viewers and your fans, my fans, to take part in this episode by sending in their questions. And, you know, we got, you know, numerous questions sent in. I obviously can't go through all of them. So I thought we could do some sort of lightning round here with you, Max, and get some of these pressing questions. People want answers to. So this one comes from at Lobberhorn Run. If Max is not worried about government regulation and interference in Bitcoin, please explain why.
Right, because first of all, there's nothing the government can do to stop Bitcoin. So there's no way to regulate Bitcoin. And that's what the governments are finding out. They would love to regulate it and they would love to stop it. But so far they've been unsuccessful because the computational power that runs Bitcoin, running at about 160 quintillion calculations per second, is beyond the reach of any government or any group of governments. So it's achieved escape velocity. Maybe 5 or 6 years ago, if governments really wanted to, they may have been able to thwart Bitcoin. But now it's too late. It's simply escape velocity has been achieved, and there's nothing any government can do, number one. Number two, you've got people inside government that are now pro-Bitcoin. So you've got a senator from Wyoming, for example, who is absolutely pro-Bitcoin, who's lobbying for Bitcoin, who wants to change the state of Wyoming to be a Bitcoin state. They've got a Bitcoin bank. And they want to compete with Delaware. They want to compete with other states. So you've got on the senatorial level, Bitcoin is making inroads. You've got people in Congress, in the Senate, who own Bitcoin, who are not going to fight Bitcoin because they would benefit by owning Bitcoin. They love Bitcoin. It's a fifth column working inside the government. So they're not motivated to stop Bitcoin. Number four, what is more likely is that in the next couple of years, the government, the U.S. government, the IRS will come to Bitcoiners and say, hey, Bitcoiners, we'll give you a 90% discount on your taxes if you pay us in Bitcoin, because the government's going to be woefully underrepresented in Bitcoin as other countries around the world are racing ahead and they're accumulating Bitcoin and they're mining Bitcoin. So America right now is not even entered the hash war or hash race or Bitcoin race with these other countries. Remember, in the 1960s, America entered the space race to compete with the Soviet Union to get into outer space, and there was that Sputnik moment. But America hasn't had their Bitcoin moment yet. We're still letting these other countries around the world grab the brass ring, to grab the momentum, and to now moving ahead of the U.S. there's a possibility, for example, Iran could be the richest country in the world because it's aggressively mining Bitcoin and accumulating Bitcoin right now. Does the U.S. want that to be the outcome? Well, and if they don't get a, if they don't start moving now and start accumulating Bitcoin, then that's the outcome. So hello, third world status. Goodbye, American century. Goodbye, U.S. dollar. But, you know, but so the more it's more likely, the more likely outcome is that the government is not regulating Bitcoin so much as they need to accumulate. They're going to set an industrial policy where it's going to be, we're going to subsidize energy and we're going to mine and accumulate Bitcoin because we want to be number one. If they don't want to be number one, America, then step aside and get, and make, let some other country be number one because you're too fat and lazy. Get the fuck out of the way.
Okay, let's try and get some other questions in here. Okay, George Ruiz asks, what is the biggest Bitcoin correction that Max expects in 2021? Does he notice any correction patterns?
The corrections in Bitcoin have been successfully getting less and less and less. I mean, I've went through three 80 to 90% corrections, you know, in Bitcoin since 2011. So, but since then, we've had less and less and less. So we just experienced a 20% correction. And so now that correction's over and now we start going higher. And so it'll start to behave more like an asset class where you might see 10 to 20% corrections. The 30, 40, 50% corrections, I think, were past that because it's because the size of the market's gotten to be a lot bigger. And the amount of money on the sidelines waiting to get in is enormous. The biggest money funds in the world, BlackRock, Stan Druckenmiller, Paul Tudor Jones, Mass Mutual Insurance Company, they're all sitting on the bid, hoping to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. And that's only going to get bigger and bigger. Sovereign wealth funds are going to get into this, et cetera. So the corrections will be less and less and less.
Okay. I like this one a lot. At Resnoir Applebee's writes, Nigel Farage recently supported Bitcoin. How does Max view political support? And does he see Bitcoin becoming a right versus left issue? Really good question.
Bitcoin is not right or left. It's on its own vector. It's on its own path. And it, as I said, it disintermediates the nation state. So you don't need politicians. You don't need politicians. You don't need right or left. You just have the hardest money asset in the world, and you're free to trade with anybody. And this is the thing. Fiat money promotes war. You know, Paul Krugman over at the New York Times said that the U.S. dollar is backed with men with guns. You know, he said, he admitted in the New York Times that the U.S. dollar fosters violence. It's backed by violence. It's terrorism in a little slip of paper. The U.S. dollar is a terrorist note. This essentially is backed by financial terrorism, whereas Bitcoin is peace. So if I want to get some Bitcoin from you, I have to offer you something that you're willing to take and trade for Bitcoin. So there's no coercion because it's unconfiscatable. You know, I cannot confiscate or coerce the Bitcoin out of you. So I can only get it through peaceful trade. So that hopefully appeals to the angels of our better nature, us as humans, and we move away from this violence and the paper money and the fiat money and the U.S. foreign policy and the politicians that love violence. They live on violence. We don't want that anymore. We want peace. We want Bitcoin.
Okay. I like this one too. This is from LaChance, wants to know, who will Max phone when he's about to be a trillionaire? Who is your phone a friend? And they add, it can't be Peter Schiff. I don't think it would be. But I want to add, it also can't be Stacy. So who's your phone a friend?
You, Danielle. I'm going to call you immediately. We're going to
rule the world.
We're going to get us twins into a spaceship. We're going to fly to Mars. We're going to meet Elon Musk. We're going to make space omelets on Mars with Elon Musk with the twins.
Sounds good. All right. I'm going to combine these two because they came up a lot from Prism Studios and David Sutherland. Both want to know, ask Max if he's ever going to sell his Bitcoin. So what would it take for Max Kaiser to sell his Bitcoin? And this is a personal question, but came up a lot. People want to know how much Bitcoin you own.
Well, I'm probably not going to sell my Bitcoin. I'm going to pass it on to the next generation. I think I have a responsibility to do that. And number two, I wouldn't want to sell Bitcoin back into fiat and give power peace, turn peace back into war. So, and I'm not motivated in any way to sell any Bitcoin. The more I hold, I keep hodling Bitcoin, the faster the revolution happens away from war and we enter an era of peace. You know, the thing about that holds humans back is something that's a vestige from our days, hundreds of thousands of years ago. You know, hard-coded in our mind is this instinct toward fear, and that's what holds us back. Bitcoin gets rid of our fears. and replaces it with love. And with a pure love in our hearts and our minds, we can move on to some different evolutionary step of greater good. And that's what we need to do. So I wouldn't want to put the Bitcoin I have back into fiat money circulation to feed, and then somebody in Washington will turn that into a bomb and they'll go kill somebody in a foreign country because they're sadists. I don't want that. You know, we got a bunch of sadists running this country, and that's not, and they run by fiat money. Every time they kill 100,000 people, they go print more money. It's disgusting.
And how much, you know, you own, I understand why you wouldn't want to disclose that, but is there a range you could share?
Well, I mean, I started buying it at a dollar, you know, and that was 10 years ago. So, you know, there's a lot of zeros.
All right. All right. We'll respect your privacy there. All right. Let's end with one that I thought was very sensitive and sweet. Nicola Cairncross would like to know what Max was like as a child. Did he know he was a super genius? Was he nurtured, or did he feel like a misfit? Did he have any mentors, or did he read any specific books that opened his eyes and made him think differently? So what was childhood like for Max Keiser?
Well, one book I love is Critical Path by Buckminster Fuller. And he is really an antecedent to Bitcoin in that he speculated on there being money made of energy, purely of energy, by energy. And he also very early in his life decided to not do anything unless it benefited the world in total and as a whole. So he came up with the geodesic dome and these types of things that were were great for humanity. He got out of this idea of thinking that he was only into self-aggrandizement. He's just thinking globally all the time. And that book, Critical Path, which is his book, it's a great book to read.
So how old were you when you read that? Like, you were like 12?
I read that in the womb.
Of course you did.
Of course you did.
That answers your question. That's
I was not even finished with the book, and the doctors were pulling me out of my mother's womb. Ass first,
turning the page.
I was a breech baby, so my ass came out first. And basically, that's how I entered life. Like, kiss my ass, world. I'm trying to finish my book, right? And it was like, I'm doing something
all right.
Here.
All right, let's get to the moment the people have waited patiently for, including myself. I do not know your forecast yet. I'm going to learn it for the first time right now.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. Max Keiser's 2021 Bitcoin forecast. You're hearing it for the first time here, folks.
I'm going with $228,000 per Bitcoin as a 2021 target. And that would bring us up to over $4 trillion market valuation, which I think is a good 2021 objective. You know, we're going to catch up to gold. That would bring us up to not quite half gold's valuation, but getting close to gold's valuation. I think the catalyst is going to be, as I said, a major central bank failing, plus the money printing is going to go absolutely Weimar Republic. So we're going to see that. Depending on how you calculate this, the 10 to 15 trillion that was printed in the last
few years. So 220,000 per Bitcoin. When you come up with these forecasts, like I said, 2 years ago, you accurately predicted the 2020 forecast. How do you come up with these numbers? Are you sitting at the table with a calculator? Are you, you know, baking your cheesecake and it comes to you? Like, how do you get to that number?
Yeah, I like the image of me baking a keto cheesecake and thinking about all these things. Well, first of all, some of it's proprietary. You know, I can't go into the minutiae because, you know, this is the secret sauce of my whole enterprise. I don't want to be too specific. But having said that, you know, there are certain trends that you can put into your calculations. So we just had a halving, right? We had the third halving in Bitcoin. You know, there's three things in Bitcoin that people like Nouriel Roubini never mention: the halvings, the difficulty adjustment, and the hash rate. Now, that would be like me being a real estate broker and trying to sell real estate and telling people that I don't know where the house is, I don't know how big the house is, and I don't know who owns the house. Would you be a successful real estate broker? No. So Nouriel Roubini never mentions the halving, the hash rate, or the difficulty adjustment, and he pretends to come across as somebody whose opinions we should have some respect for, when clearly he's a propagandist, NYU, lackey, kind of fart-inhaling moron.
Okay, so Rubini is your target today. We get it. But that,
okay,
that should...
let me get back to the question. So the yeah. halving happens every 4 years. So the supply gets cut in half. So that then you input that into the demand. So the demand is going, you know, the demand's going higher, right? All these huge money folks are coming in to Bitcoin. Then the supply is shrinking. For example, there's 900 Bitcoin a day that are created, and the demand is over 4,000 a day. So that should tell you something right there. If you look at the exchanges, where there's Bitcoin, kind of a snapshot of how many Bitcoin are circulating or in existence, being moved around, that is shrinking rapidly because institutions are taking Bitcoin. They're gobbling up that Bitcoin. We're going to enter a Bitcoin shortage. So a couple of things we haven't seen, we're going to see in 2021. We're going to see gap pricing in terms of price discovery. So, okay, it's 36,000, 37,000. You know, once you get above 40,000, that panic buying from institutions comes in. You could see 42,000, and then the next print be 44,000, right? You're going to see.
Is it a straight up road to 220,000, or is there going to be major corrections along the way?
Well, like we just saw, a 20% correction. I think we're going to see 10-20% corrections all the time. And I don't know. I wouldn't say that this is where we end the year either. Probably this 220,000 number, probably you're going to see that in October, November will be the high of the year. If you look historically to how the Bitcoin's traded versus the halvings and the demand and the difficulty adjustment and the mining industry and the acceleration of the technology in the mining industry and how efficient miners are, the cost of electricity, right? That's also a factor in this calculation. So there's a lot of different things that come into it.
I also have a forecast for Bitcoin.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it. I'm going to write it down on a piece of paper, fold it, and put it into this desk that you don't see in the shot. And
I can tell you what yours is.
You I know have yours that power is. Too.
I know what yours is.
All right. Well,
I'm going to write down what I think yours is right now, and I'm going to put it into the safe. And
okay. And then we'll switch. Know,
and then you'll see.
Then no, we're going to share
this.
Reveal
your number. I'm like Kreskin, the amazing Kreskin on the Johnny Carson show. My don't number will it. Match your number.
We're going to do a show. Like in November, end of 2021, where we will take out these pieces of papers. I'll do mine later, since I don't have paper right here. But the central bank that's going to close, shut down, blow up.
Right. So let's see. The candidates are Bank of Japan, Bank of England, Federal Reserve Bank, European Central Bank. Probably the bank that is in the deepest quagmire of problems would be the ECB. I think the ECB will be dissolved and something will take its place. And they won't call it a crash necessarily. I think the ECB bank is going to be probably, let's call it being, they're going to get dissolved in 2021. And it's going to be replaced with some other facility. Like they could say, "Oh, we're going to do a hundred trillion credit facility with special drawing rights from the IMF." Our friend Christine Lagarde and the ECB are going to get back together again and get the band back together again. And they're going to try to bail out the Eurozone, but they're going to have to dissolve the ECB first.
So they're going to market it like a rebrand.
Yeah. It's going to be. Okay. They're going to mark it as a rebrand, right. Restart, a reset. They're going to call it a reset or a new Bretton Woods. Okay, so we've heard those terms already, right? A new Bretton Woods and a reset. So as part of that Bretton Woods / reset, they're going to come out of that meeting and say, here it is. And by the way, one of these banks, these central banks, had to be dissolved. Exactly like in 2008 when Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns had to be sacrificed. They got into a room and Dick Fuld over there at Lehman Brothers was taken out back and shot in the head, right? And said, you've got to sacrifice. You've got to give all your assets to Jamie Dimon today or the country goes into receivership, okay. Dick Fuld. Take one for the team, buddy.
Let's end on this note. If Bitcoin is at 220,000 in 2021, gold goes to?
Let's say gold gets in above 3,000. Hello?
Yeah, that's a very bullish call for gold.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, gold is not going to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, gold is not, I'm not in the camp that says Bitcoin is going to demonetize gold.
Okay.
I'm not in that camp. There's a group that says this, but you know, gold is still the primary asset for all central banks.
Let's take it.
Still the base layer money that runs the global economy has done for 100, 300, 200 years, whatever.
Now that I'm on this path, I have to take it one step further or I'm going to get all these emails. Why didn't you ask them about silver then? Okay. Gold goes to 3,000. Where does silver go? Let's end it there.
Well, you know, silver, when we did crash JP Morgan buy silver in back in 2011, it was at 15. We drove it to 50 bucks. And then that was the old high under the Hunt brothers. Then, of course, it dropped back down to the $11, $12, $13 range. Now it's trading higher. It's pushing high 20s, pushing 30. So I say that, yeah, it's going to get through that 50 level. And therefore, if I'm saying gold is up, blah, blah, blah. I think silver, of course, is going to be well over 100 bucks.
Wow. Silver investors. You heard it here first.
Well, the miners are freaking cheap. The silver and gold miners are cheap. Yeah. Those stocks are freaking cheap. Number one stock during the Depression? Homestake Mining. Right?
I know, but we're still halfway from its original high. So, you know, hearing triple digits, that's mind-blowing.
They're going to do great. I mean, if it wasn't for Bitcoin, those things would look awesome. But, you know, Bitcoin's going to 10 to 20x those things.
Max Kaiser, this is the greatest Bitcoin interview of all time.
Probably.
Thank you. Thank you for giving it to me. I'm very thankful and grateful.
I'd love to give it to you, Daniela.
What a way to start 2021. Thank you, Max Kaiser. So thorough. And I think people will learn a lot. I sure did.
If you see Nouriel Roubini, Tom, I'm looking for him. I'm looking for you, Nouriel.
Many times to come on my show.
I was offered $100,000 to go debate Nouriel in London. And I said, for 150, I would do it. But for 100, it wasn't worth it to be in the same room with that pile of garbage.
Is it true Stephen Baldwin didn't listen to you about
buying
Bitcoin?
Yeah, I was going to pay Stephen Baldwin in Bitcoin when we made our film. I think it was 4 years together. We made a TV show. And I offered to pay him in Bitcoin. And he refused. I think he would be worth $60 to $70 million today.
Okay. How about Alec? Did Alec Baldwin
I tried to give him Bitcoin 10 years ago when it was under $10. And I did give him Bitcoin, which he then lost. And I think that was now worth about $30 million. That's completely lost.
Russell
Brand, he just lost it because I gave him the keys. Russell Brand, I gave some Bitcoin to in London. He lost his Bitcoin as well. That's why people always tell me, oh, send me some Bitcoin. You have so many. I'm like, if I do, you're going to lose it, right? You have to earn it.
I won't lose it. I will cherish it.
That's what they all say. That's what they all say, Daniela.
Let's go find out
your tricks.
Stash.
I know what's going on.
All right. Let's go find
Alex Jones. You know, I offered to give Alex Jones 10,000 Bitcoin to give to his listeners. When this was in Bitcoin, it was under $5. To try to expand the Alex Jones empire.
Well,
He said no.
Look at you now, right?
Close to billionaire status, Alex Jones, to completely screwed up.
Well, now you are the
$300 million. You messed up.
You and Stacey are now the king and queen of the Bitcoin universe. And you guys deserve that success. So continue.
Join us.
Come to the Bitcoin side.
Come to the Citadel.
Thank you so much, Max Kaiser. Give my love to Stacy. Thank you so much. This is must watch TV, guys. Thank you, Max Kaiser.
Until next time.
Aye. And thank you for watching this incredible edition of Stansberry Research. We will have much more for you, so be sure to stay tuned to this channel. I'm Daniela Comboni. Thanks for watching.
So now you've seen what Max Keiser has predicted for 2021. He also states that he thinks the high will be round about October. So that's an interesting thing. But his predictions basically are that gold will go to $3,000. And if you look at the current price of gold, it's $1,850. So you're looking at a 60% increase in the price of gold this year, if he's right. Then he says that silver will go from the current price, which is round about $30 to $100. That is a threefold increase. And then the real stunner is Bitcoin, which is round about $40,000. And he predicts it'll go to $220,000. That is beyond imagination. But people take him seriously because he's been right before. Now, the one thing that I noticed in his predictions is that he talks about the European Central Bank collapsing. And he says that the European Central Bank will collapse. He says that it's the central bank that's in the worst shape of them all. So he predicts its collapse. Therefore, when I look at his prediction of Bitcoin going to 220,000, it seems to me that a big part of the pressure that's going to push it to that level in this year, according to him, is based on the European Central Bank collapsing. So the question is, if the European Central Bank doesn't collapse, and he says there that, look, they won't call it a collapse, they'll reword it as something else, etc., etc., but in effect it will be a collapse. In other words, just like the Americans where they say, oh, this is a stimulus package, this is quantitative easing, etc. They've got all these funny terms that they hide behind. They think up some words, talk some shit while stealing your money. So I think the real key here is the collapsing of a central bank, whether it's the European Central Bank or some other central bank. I think that that is part of what he thinks will help to drive it excessively high. But the question is, what if it doesn't happen that way this year? I did notice that he had made a prediction about 10 years ago. He had made a prediction that the British pound was going to collapse. And to my knowledge, the British pound never collapsed. So maybe he's older and wiser now, and his prediction is close. But I thought I would just mention that maybe some of the driving power in all these price rises relate to the European Central Bank pumping out much more stimulus. In other words, in order to avoid collapse, they just go and they print tons of new money, etc. And that is what he's banking on. So maybe if that doesn't happen this year, his predictions won't be that spectacular. But even if they are half as spectacular, they're still fantastic. In the case of gold, you're looking at a 60% rise, and silver, you're looking at tripling. Now, remember ETFs. So if you have money in an ETF, so remember, if it's a leveraged ETF that is bullish and it's leveraged by a factor of 2, then if gold goes up by 50%, then the ETF's price will go up by 100%. And if you have money in silver and it goes up and triples, and you put that in a leveraged ETF that goes up double, then the net result will be that it will go up sixfold. So just a disclaimer, I'm not a financial expert. These are my opinions. I'm just telling you what I think is going to happen. Make up your own mind. Determine your own risks. But I thought I'd give you these things as food for thought, because I think we're in quite a unique time. I think we're entering quite a unique time. and the massive super stimulus of 2020 is going to have an impact, I think. And that impact is going to push the gold up sooner than I had previously anticipated. Already last year, it hit $2,000 an ounce, which was unexpected. But these are my personal thoughts. Do your own thing. Assess your own risks. Risk assessment is all part and parcel of this game. But from my perspective, I think we've got something to look at seriously. Exactly how accurate Max's predictions are, I don't know. If a central bank were to fold, I think that would be enormous. That would be very interesting. But I wouldn't want to bet the farm on it. If his prediction turns out to be true, that Bitcoin goes over $200,000, that'll be insanely wild. That is an increase of more than 5 times. I hope that this gives you some food for thought as we enter wild times. I think we're going to enter wilder and wilder times. The COVID on the one hand, the election fraud on the other hand, I think there are lots of exciting things that are happening. I think the Western world and whites are going to go crazy. We're looking at wild 2020s, but by the 2030s, who knows, maybe we'll be doing some shooting, who knows what's happening. I think the shooting is also coming at some point, but it's not yet here. It's not yet here, it's still some years away. But everything is becoming very unstable and weird, and I like it. This is the chaos that I've been talking about for such a long time, where I've been saying to people, embrace the chaos, embrace the chaos. Here is the chaos. And in this chaos, weird things will happen, things that won't happen normally. And if you are up on your game, you can actually benefit from them. So I hope this gives you a bunch of food for thought. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.